The semi-annual warehouse clearance event is happening now at Sleep Outfitters. This is your chance to save big with up to 65% off mattresses store-wide. Plus, get a free adjustable base with select Sealy mattresses. These limited-time warehouse clearance deals won't last, and with our lifetime price guarantee, you can rest assured you're getting the best deal. The semi-annual warehouse clearance event, only at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com to find a store near you.
Find the perfect space for your business with DRK & Company Realty. Flexible office suites are available. Employees and clients benefit from free parking, front door access, and walkable dining, retail, and hotels at the Polaris Lifestyle Center. Managed by DRK & Company Realty, one of Central Ohio's most trusted leaders, this safe, well-maintained property offers dedicated on-site management and responsive maintenance. Grow your business at an address designed for success at 470 Old Worthington Road. Visit drk-realty.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkondorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening Colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with a musician shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Helen Tupper, co-founder and CEO of Amazing If, a company on a mission to make careers better for everybody. In 2013, Helen and her university friend Sarah Ellis noticed how their careers had changed from the early propulsion of traditional career ladder graduate schemes to roles that developed them in lots of different and enjoyable directions. Knowing peers were unhappily stuck on a linear career ladder that was holding their development back, Helen and Sarah decided to help others succeed in, as they say, more squiggly careers. Creating a side project of small-scale training sessions in London, sharing practical tools and actions, the pair became accidental entrepreneurs, as they said, naming their new venture Amazing If. Amazing If now delivers learning programs with organizations including, drumroll, the BBC, Levi's and Microsoft, and they offer individual and corporate consulting and coaching, alongside two guidebooks and a weekly Squiggly Careers podcast, about 400 of them apparently. It's fabulous having you here, Mrs. Squiggly Career Person. What is a squiggly career when it's at home?
Okay, good place to start. A squiggly career is the opposite of the ladder-like career that has been around for such a long time and makes people see that direction is only about becoming more senior. So when they think about their career, success is kind of going up the ladder. And we've been presented with that for quite a long time, and it leads to quite a lot of problems because there often aren't enough opportunities for promotion for people. So they end up kind of getting frustrated by that. And also, everyone doesn't always want to go up the ladder. They might want to develop in a different direction. So Squiggly Career is a bit of a reset. It's about saying, how do we give people the freedom and flexibility to develop in the direction that is right for them, rather than creating a career that they need to conform to? And it also acknowledges that this is not likely to be linear and predictable. There's going to be lots of change. And that doesn't mean that you're doing it wrong. That just means you're working in a world where that is now the norm. And so the way you think about your development, the way that you invest in your learning needs to reflect that squiggliness.
And when did you realise, and why, that your own career of the ladder going nice in a nice linear way up from the left bottom bit of the graph to the right bit of the graph wasn't for you?
I think when I was at Virgin, so I definitely started with quite a ladder-like career.
I was in marketing
and started out actually in sales, and I liked graduate schemes so much, which is quite a ladder-like thing, I think, to go on to after university, that I did three of them back-to-back.
I think I read you started at Alliance Boots.
Yes, I did.
And then I imagine you went to, is it Britvic?
I did, yes.
And was the third one Procter & Gamble?
It was.
Wow.
I mean,
it's like three out of three.
It's slightly spooky that you know that. But yes, at the point I was at Procter & Gamble, I thought I probably can't do another graduate scheme.
I was going to say, because when obviously we do a bunch of research, Stu, producer, and I, and that's like, I look at those CVs and I've been hiring people for too long, 30 years almost. And you go, wow, that's one of those busy ones. That's a 2-2-2. And you go, well, are you only going to stay with me for 2 years? You say to Helen. And Helen says,
I think I was working out what I wanted to do and what I enjoyed. And I think part of the problem actually with ladder-like careers is we don't create the possibilities for what we call squiggle and stay. So if you give people squiggly structures, they can move around an organization and they can work that out for themselves. But when we put people in very siloed structures, often the only way that they can work out what they're good at and what they enjoy is to go and squiggle to a different organisation. So actually a lot of our work now is with large companies saying you don't want to lose these talented people that are trying to work out what they're good at and what they enjoy. We want to create opportunities for them to squiggle and stay and kind of try before they apply, or they're going to basically leave in order to learn about them. So I think I was coming up against the ladder and saying, well, if I can't find my opportunity for learning here, I'll do it somewhere else. And I think my early career was sort of was shaped by that. And then at the time that I was at Virgin, so that would have been probably sort of about 10 years into my career when I was at Virgin, I think what I'd realised and what my business partner Sarah had realised was that actually letting go of this idea of up is the only way and we should always be progressively more senior had led to lots more interesting opportunities, lots of sideways moves, lots more learning, meeting interesting people. And we had a lot of support to enable us to do that in the form of coaching and mentoring and managers that gave us learning opportunities. And we recognised that other people wanted to have the same development. They wanted to try different things, but they weren't able to access the same level of support that we had. And so that's where we thought, well, how do we help people succeed in these increasingly squiggly careers and give them access to the same sort of learning opportunities that we had? And that sort of drive to democratise career development was a very big desire from the outset from us, really.
I am with Helen Tupper. She's my business shaper today. She's the co-founder of Amazing If. We've been talking about the squiggly career and your career, which was the ladder career. Well done. Three trainee programs for the price of one. Who knew? But you've gone and done it. But the serious point is you got to a moment where you said, actually, I'm really interested in this notion of career development with Sarah, your friend, now your business partner. What was it from an emotional point of view that connected you with the idea of doing something to help other people's careers? Why?
I think I had a desire to be a manager for a really long time. And I remember my first management position was at E.ON. And I look back now and I feel slightly guilty for these basically career development guinea pigs that worked for me, because every week I had a new tool that I was trying out in a team meeting and a new exercise that I was doing in my one-to-ones. But I realised that like the difference that you can make to someone's development when you care about their career. Because I don't think everybody has the same level of passion that I do about career development, which is fine. But I think the impact of that when you're a manager is that somebody maybe isn't as self-aware because they're not getting as much feedback. They can't see beyond the role that they're in. So they become quite restricted when they're thinking about their opportunities. And I really, the bigger the team that I managed, the more I realised the difference that you could make to people. And I think if you help people in their career, you help them in their life. Mm. Like they take that home with them. It affects conversations they have with their family. You know, there are financial implications of people finding the right fit. I think there's a whole load of things.
And how did it make you feel, you helping these people and continue to help them? What's the connection you have?
I think it just makes me feel like I've made a difference. And I think in my day, I'd be working on different marketing campaigns and debating budgets and plans. And that was intellectually interesting. But then I would have a conversation with someone about their career. And that feeling of having made a difference to that individual was very, you know, that felt very different to debating a marketing plan. And whilst I like both, the thing that I took home was that conversation that I'd had, and I just did a desire to do more of it, to help more people, to sort of scale that impact and honestly have kind of more of that feeling of reward.
And when you were younger and thinking about life and the universe and work, I want to come to work and identity in a bit, but when you were younger, were you the kind of friend that was always thinking about other people in a way that, you know, was different? Was there more of it? You know, did you ever think, I'm going to go into the caring professions?
No. No. I always thought I was going to go into business. So my mum, and I didn't really know what that meant. And I remember having a conversation with a friend's dad when we were probably about 13, 14. He owned like quite a few businesses in Lincolnshire. And he said, you know, what do you want to do when you grow up, Helen? And I was like, I want to work in business. And I thought I was being so clear and confident. And he was like, I remember him laughing and being like, but what business? And I just wrote it out. And I was like, well, you know, business, obviously. And then we just skipped on. But I've always had a desire to work in large organisations, and it's why, you know, working for places like Microsoft, you I love the impact of large businesses. And it was probably one of the reasons that I didn't run my own business sooner, was because I didn't want to miss out on the opportunity to work in those large organisations.
And these aren't large. I mean, if I start, go back to the Boots, Britvic, P&G,
yes,
these are big companies. Microsoft, rather huge.
Yes.
But you felt, did you feel like a person in there, a human in there, even though these were enormous companies?
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Why though? Because that's not easy. A lot of people, I know a lot of people who've done, some have done, who are still running big Procter & Gamble businesses, and others who kind of went in, felt they were just a number and then left. How did you navigate those big environments?
Well, I think early on in my career, I was part of a cohort. Because I'd done so many of those sort of community-based learning, you know, there's the graduate scheme and the experience graduate scheme, I was always part of a community. So even though you're in a large organisation, I had that sense of connection with lots of people that I had started with. And then I think probably one of my skills is that I'm good at building relationships relatively quickly. And also once you've worked in a few different places, you're less daunted by, you know, doing it again. So working in lots of different businesses meant that I could, you know, I could do that. I could build connections really quickly and I wasn't kind of scared by it. And I love building relationships. I love learning from other people. And so being in those large organisations, for me, it's just an opportunity to learn from lots of different people, as well as the impact that you make, I think, in those businesses. You have more reach with your work because of the, you know, the scale of those companies.
Makes perfect sense. Stay with me for much more from my business shape today. It's Helen Tupper. She'll be back in a couple of minutes. She's the co-founder of Amazing If, which is a great name. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Lydia Kellett invites business founders to share their industry insights and practical advice for those of you thinking about getting into an industry and starting your very own thing. In this clip, focused on the edtech industry, we hear from Chris Carla, co-founder and CEO of Kinu, a gamified learning app designed to increase the rate of knowledge acquisition.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
So EdTech seems to be thriving with the success of companies like Kinu and, of course, Duolingo's success in language learning. What advice would you give to others looking to enter into the world of EdTech?
Do it. There's so much cool stuff to do. Again, learning is upstream of everything. And if you look at the educational system now, like just take the US, for example, it's very, very clear that there's like a lot of opportunity because many, many things don't work. The cost of tuition is outpacing inflation. Very soon, an undergraduate degree in the US will cost millions. Like the ROI for many programs in many schools is negative now in the US. And many schools are, you know, eschewing the SAT. This is very US-centric, but, you know, I think it highlights the point. Many companies are doing their own forms of knowledge assessment. So basically, like, it's kind of in a crisis situation. You know, almost $2 trillion in U.S. student debt. There's just so much to do. I think my advice for anyone that's interested in learning or in ed tech would just, like, find the problem that you're the most interested in, and there'll probably be something there. You know, maybe that's contrarian advice. Everyone else is saying, you know, everything is so crowded. I don't believe that.
The Michigan Innovation Series. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can hear all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. My guest today is Helen Tupper, co-founder and CEO of Amazing If, a company on a mission to make careers better for everyone. You and Sarah, co-founders.
Yes.
Friends.
Yes.
Why are you friends?
That's a very good question. I think sometimes we ask ourselves that.
That's like saying, why are we married? That's a different question.
Well, we kind of borderline are. You know, yeah. You share a bank account and I talk to her more than anybody else. So we borderline are. Yeah, it is a good question. Why are we friends? We have a lot of differences, and I think sometimes that's challenging when we're kind of debating things. But I think we've known each other for so long now. We've worked together for such a long time that we realise that our differences are what make us better. So we're writing our third book at the moment, for example, and Sarah is a very thoughtful, reflective person who can work in a bit of a bubble. So she can write our book for days on end, which is brilliant because it needs that level of intensity, whereas I'm much more reactive and active. So, you know, I will kind of solve problems fast and make things happen. And that means that I can move elements of the book forward quite quickly. It means that I can run the business while she's doing more of the writing. And
But you will say to her, hold on, you've written ABC, but I've been thinking, Sarah, I think actually we've said that, we've thought that, but we've changed our mind. It should be a bit more that. And she'll go, oh, that's better.
Yes.
And then she'll go off into a bubble and rewrite.
100%. That is the exact process that is happening right now. And so we don't try to be each other. Like I don't try to be the thoughtful, reflective person because it's not where I add the most value. I can quickly, you know, engage in something that Sarah has done and spot what we need to do differently. And either I'll go and make it happen quickly, or if it needs a bit more thought, Sarah will pick that up. And that approach applies to how we manage our team, how we run the business, how we create content, write books. And so I think we're friends because we're better together, in all honesty. And we like each other, but I think from a business.
And has it changed your friendship now that you work together? Because there's one thing being good mates, and there's another thing, having seen this happen many times, you know, inevitably it does change.
The boundaries are very blurry. So she messaged me last week, actually, about something that happened in the business. And she sent me a message. I was on a train and saying, oh, I'm not sure how I feel about this thing that I had done. And so I instantly responded with a, gosh, I'm really sorry. Let's think about how we can solve this. And straight into, you know, reactive, solve the problem mode. And then she messaged me and said, oh, I was just kind of wanting a little bit of support from a friend. I didn't really need my business partner to kind of solve this for me. But because we are so close, sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the friend and the business partner. So I think it has changed over time. You know, more of our conversations now are about the business and very little about life outside of work.
But you're able to be honest with each other, because I think there's one thing we always say, you know, you read the textbook, it's very important to be honest, and there's nothing wrong with conflict, and actually conflict can be very productive. That's hard as friends. Sometimes, you know, the people we love the most are the people we're least likely to be the most honest with, because it's just too painful. And actually, if I'm loved by a sibling or I'm loved by, you know, somebody and then they criticize me, I find that hard.
Yes. I think we have got better at giving each other feedback because it gets in our way if we don't. So I remember there was a meeting, it's like 6 or 7 years ago now, it's really stuck in my head, with Penguin. It was when we were writing our first book. We were both really excited about it. And it was, an early meeting with Penguin about the content. And the context for Sarah and me is we've both led in corporate roles. So we're quite used to leading. We've never, at that point, we hadn't kind of co-led something. And we remember the meeting, and Sarah basically took control of the meeting, and I kind of sat down and listened and got increasingly more frustrated about what contribution I was making. And we came away from that, and I think I probably simmered for a little while. And then we had a very emotive discussion about what value we both brought in those situations. Now we are much better at spotting when we are better together and planning for, well, okay, you take the lead in this situation. We can call it and take action. And also when you don't need two of us. I think in the early days, we're like, two is always better. And actually sometimes you think, no, like I'm the better person to work on this. And we can give each other feedback. And I think we are much better now at using the insight to improve our business performance. Right? I think we were so long in corporate careers, it was all about your individual performance, and co-founding and co-running a company. I think we've learned to do something different now.
Why is work so important, do you think? Because if we were having this conversation, which wouldn't be through the radio or on a podcast 100 years ago because it didn't exist, but if we were having it 100 years ago, it'd be a very, very different notion of what work meant in someone's life.
Well, I think work was much more kind of defined and limited, whereas now I think it is very blurry and it's much more connected to our identity. So just from the time we spend at work, so in our life, most of our time, of our hours in our life is spent sleeping. But the second thing that you do most with your time is work. And so work, you know, sometimes people say, oh, don't worry about it, it's only work. Mm. I kind of go, well, nah, it's quite important. It is where you spend most of your time. You spend more time with people at work than you do with your family. And it is a really big part of our identity.
And yours.
Yes, like a huge
part. Because you're a mum as well, two kids.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the way that we feel about work doesn't just affect how we show up when we're doing the work. It affects how we show up like with our children, with our friends. And so for me, you know, work is such an important part of people's life. And if there's a way that we can help people feel a bit more in control of what they're doing at work, a bit more confident about where they're going at work, then I think that that has a really big impact on all the other things that they do with their time as well.
Is it, though, if I would be tough on it for a sec, is it a luxury to think squiggle-lily? Because for a lot of people, they're just grateful they've got a job, money comes in, they do leave. It means less to them than you or me. It's not about their identity, it's something else. And actually, it's an aspiration to say, well, I could move left and I could move right.
Well, I guess there's a carrot and stick to Squiggly, I suppose. So the carrot is invest in your Squiggly career, develop the skills, and you'll have more opportunities. You'll have more choice, you'll have more opportunities because you're not kind of limiting yourself to one particular position. Like, lovely carrot message. The stick message is if you don't invest in your Squiggly career, you are much more likely to get left behind. Because what happens when we're just in a role, we wait for our manager to come to us for opportunities, we don't learn in advance of where we are, is we become very vulnerable.
There's no
change.
Agency, basically.
There's no agency, and actually skills that you need to succeed change, organisational structures change around you, and you haven't got the relationships that you might need to navigate that change. You've not got the skills that are going to support you to get to a new role. So I think, you know, for some people, like I say, it is the carrot, maybe more about your kind of luxury point.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't think about how do I invest in my career so that I have more control over my development. I think that is applicable for everybody.
I mean, are you really saying, you know, people should just take control of their lives and think about what it is that they want to do in it? And is that quite an old message? But is there something deeper than that? Because as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, you know what? I always say to people, it's your career, it's your life. We want to help you, but at the end of the day, you've got to decide.
I think that,
is it more than that?
Well, I think there's a difference between sort of platitudes and practical stuff.
I think Helen just accused me of a platitude, which is fair enough. You know what? It was a bit. As I said, I thought that's a kind of obvious thing to say. But you're right. So what's the underbelly of that? What's the substance?
It's giving people the practical tools. So I could say to you, oh, Elliot, it'll be all be right. Don't worry about it. Just keep working hard.
Keep saying that.
You'll be fine. You're a talented guy. Good. You'll be fine.
So I could finally just, said it. I've been waiting to hear those words for 30 years.
It doesn't really help you. It maybe makes you feel a bit better in the moment, but the next day you're like, I've got the same problem. I still don't know what to do about it. So I think what we are trying to do is give people practical tools, like things that they can use to help them think, well, what do I actually want to be known for and how do I use those strengths more?
And give me one example of a practical tool.
Helping people to think about their strengths. So if you think about in ladder-like careers, people get very hung up on their job titles. So this is my title, therefore this is what I can do next. It sounds similar and a bit more senior. That's the way we think when careers are like ladders. In squiggly careers, we're not thinking about titles, we're thinking about talents. So it's much more what work gives you energy, what do you actually want to be known for, and how can we help you transfer those talents? So if I was working with you, that is a very different conversation I would have with your career than let's look at your job title, Elliot, and see what other things look like that. If we start with your talents, they take people much further into roles that they might not have considered because they need what they want to be known for, even though the job title might look very different to what they do today.
That makes perfect sense. Stay with me for my final chat with my guest. It's Helen Tupper. And we've got some Roy Ayres for you as well. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
Helen Tupper is my business shaper just for a few more minutes. I've read somewhere that you said you and Sarah were accidental entrepreneurs. Mm. And I've also, I love this little thing I read about, I think it's to do with the gremlins, the confidence gremlin thing. So I put the two together.
Okay.
There's Helen doing well, really well, all these different roles. She then has this moment saying, you know what, I want to pivot away from marketing. I think my life is going to be around developing people's careers because that's what really makes me excited. Found my partner to do it with. But wasn't there a, yeesh, but can I do this?
Interesting. I think the eek, as you say it, was more about who am I without the big brands that I work for. So I don't think I had the eek or what if it doesn't work.
Because you were confident enough in yourself.
Yeah, and I you know, we'd planned so that there was sufficient money. I had about a 9-month runway to turn. So I went on the business full time before Sarah, and I had a 9-month runway to turn it from what had been a profitable side project into a scalable business.
And how long was the side project for?
About 6 years to that point.
Oh, okay, quite a significant time. So it was a good minimum viable product.
Exactly.
Experiment.
We'd kind of proved it. We'd already worked with lots of large organizations at that point. I was using all of my holiday to work with them, as that was part of
you must have been exhausted.
I had 2 children at that time and the 5-day-a-week job at Microsoft and using all my holiday to run the side project. So it was time. If it was ever going to go beyond that, it was time to do it. And so I had a sort of 9-month financial runway to try and turn it. And worst case scenario, I thought I would just, you know, go back to marketing, which is a job that I enjoyed in a large organization because I'd built relationships. So I was sort of confident that if it didn't work, it would be okay. But I think the thing that I worried most about was the, you know, the who am I without these big brands that I work for, because my identity, I think, up until that point had been like, I'm successful because I work for Microsoft, I'm successful because I work for Virgin. And there was definitely that moment of, well, who am I now? And that definitely took a little bit of...
And who were you then? What was your answer to yourself?
Well, that's it. I never held this, you know, you mentioned the entrepreneur and the accidental entrepreneur. I never held that identity. I don't actually think I hold it that much now, that idea of an entrepreneur. I think of myself as a business owner, which I don't know. I think I attach something slightly different to that as a feeling. I think I am now the person who helps other people succeed in their squiggly careers. And I've attached myself to that identity. And I think I find that more comfortable because it is more about other people than it is me.
Yeah.
I think that's...
And in that, in your thing about talents, not titles, what are the top two or three talents that you think you have that you have nurtured and made sure are the things that you're using as you build this business?
I think I'm very good at creating clarity for people. So what you tend to find when people are talking about their careers or thinking about their development is there's quite a lot of confusion. You know, they don't know what they want. They don't know what to do. And I think I have a skill in helping people create clarity. And that applied to marketing as much as it does actually to career development. So transferable in that sense. I also think I have the energy to make things happen. So, you know, whether that is, you know, doing growing things in the business or, you know, creating campaigns for the podcast or whatever it is. If there is an idea, I attach kind of my energy to it and it will happen. And those two things have been helpful in many of the different things that I've done in my career.
I've definitely picked up on the energy.
Oh, that's
and it's
nice.
Lovely. And your clarity. You're super clear on that moment and what you've been doing ever since. And it's fab. These podcasts as well.
Yes.
Where can one hear your podcast?
In all the places people find podcasts. So Spotify, Apple, you'll find us, Squiggly Careers are there.
And you've enjoyed doing them?
Yeah, I love it. It's a weekly moment that Sarah and I get to think, talk and create together. And no matter how busy things are, there's always that moment for that.
I agree, and I can empathise with that. I have the same feeling. Very lucky too, eh? Thank you so much. It's been lovely to meet you, lovely to chat. Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice? And why have you chosen it?
My song choice is Stay High by Brittany Howard, and I love her voice, and I think whenever I listen to it, it just takes me back to a really happy place. So I can be having a very busy, challenging day, and I can hear the first bit of that song and instantly kind of feel better about what is coming next.
Brittany Howard with Stay High, the song choice of my business shaper today, Helen Tupper. She talked all about the importance of giving yourself options in your career. That is the point of a squiggly career. She talked about co-leading and how when you lead a business with somebody, you need to work out when you should have both of you in the room and when you only need one of you. And finally, she talked about that lovely phrase, talents, not titles. And when she talked about the talent she had, creating clarity was number one and bringing energy to make things happen, number two. Great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondareya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.